Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to the Free Cities Podcast number 25. It certainly feels good to reach our quarter century milestone. And the good news is there is plenty more content to come from our fact-finding trips to Poland, Portugal, and Montenegro. We're back in Poland this week to meet with a gentleman by the name of Jacek Spendel. Jacek is the president of Liberty International, which I'm told is the oldest organization promoting libertarianism worldwide. In this conversation, we discuss the work of Liberty International, as well as Jacek's views on libertarianism, travel, free cities, and the future of the free world. Jacek has an optimistic viewpoint, which is something that we wholeheartedly endorse here at the Free Cities Foundation. And it's incredibly encouraging to hear from so many different people and organizations working towards the same goals of freedom and personal liberty. Don't forget that tickets for our conference in Prague this October are on sale now at libertyinourlifetime.org. And if you want to get a good sense of what it's like to attend, please do check out the featured video at the top of our YouTube channel, found at Free Cities Foundation. That video was shot during last year's event, and I look forward to seeing you at this year's event. In the meantime, please just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Jacek Spendel. Interested to hear your opinion then on the concept, the underlying concept, not the specifics of it. In particular, I agree.
Liberty in our lifetime, basically, right?
That, yes.
Let me put it this way: you got, in my opinion, I might be wrong. You guys want to help to realize a dream of libertarians that there could be actually places in this world where our ideas on advancing individual freedom, prosperity, advancing maximum respect towards individuality could be actually realized in the autonomous zones / free cities, where hosting nation will basically agree that such a classical liberal formation can exist and can deliver outcomes that they will be happy with, and the people who move there will be happy with. So actually a realization of dreams of all the libertarians, right? And these dreams cannot be realized in traditional functioning democracies where welfare state ideas always prevail. So,
well, okay,
that's more or less what I have in mind.
Yes. Well, elaborate on that then. Elaborate on why. I mean, another aspect of the Free Cities model is the ability to opt in. I think that's quite a significant one. You have the option to opt in and out, which is
why do you guys say cities? It cannot be free village. It must be a city.
It can. I think the reason is because the original concept, in its origin, was a free private city. But no, I prefer personally the word jurisdictions, but it's a bit too late to change it now. So yeah, think of it as free jurisdictions. And within that, it's a spectrum. Dubai, you know, tax zones, you know, all of these things are part of this idea.
Right.
So it sounds to me like you have an opinion on places like Dubai and maybe Singapore.
I do. I was in Dubai 3 weeks ago, 1 month ago.
Okay, so let me hear. What's your opinion?
Oh, well, it is mostly positive. I knew that Dubai is generally pro-private property and rather low-taxed jurisdiction. And that is all. And but when you come there and you see this fantastic growth on your eyes. You see these constructions, you see these big roads. It looks like, you know, a mixture of United States' most glorious cities with kind of Arab spirit. Then you realize that it's not just a place that allow people to prosper, but this is really happening and this is really marvelous. Plus, something that I did not think about before coming there, that this is actually very open place for immigration. And even though this is the country that hosts Dubai, right? United Arab Emirates, it is far from the classical liberal or libertarian model of country, if we can say that. Still, this model of immigration, where it is fairly easy to come from all over the place. I talk to very average people, you know, who work in hotels as cleaners, who are chefs, who work in kitchen and so on and so forth. People from Uganda, people from Rwanda, from India, many of them, from Pakistan, Bangladesh. Amazingly, they can easily get permit to come there to work. The taxes are very, very low, if any. It depends on the Emirates, of course. And I think this is great. And, you know, very different than European model, for example. Well, it's quite original then that nationals of this country, United Arab Emirates, the holders of UAE passport are making only 10% of the population. This is very unusual. So this entire makeup with immigration, with this growth that you can see and really enjoy, it really influenced me. I see big potential. I cannot say that I'm a fan of Dubai, because there are things that I probably would like to change when it comes to personal freedoms. I'm a libertarian, so their model is not necessarily libertarian. But when it comes to economic freedom, when it comes to immigration, these are big things. Big things I really appreciate. And
so you're broaden your interpretation of your view on immigration in general and the ability to move, because it's an intricate part of the Free Cities model is the ability to vote with your feet. I take it you find that as an important element.
Oh, very important. I believe that this is true democracy, right? When you can relocate easily and decide what system, what jurisdiction works for you best. And even if we look at the welfare state, if someone likes welfare state, go to the country that has this welfare state model. If I don't like it, I will go to a place that is freer. So the more competition of jurisdictions we have, the easier it would be to vote with your feet. So I don't like some tendencies in European Union, for example, where they want to harmonize everything, you know, harmonize taxes, harmonize social programs, and so on and so forth. So within the EU, it will be harder and harder to vote with your feet if you really want to enjoy a difference, a different model than the welfare state one. So,
and
the more the better.
Is that something you've considered in your own life? I take it you live in Poland.
I do live in Poland. However, I spent a significant amount of time in the United States. It used to be 3 to 4 months a year. Now I reduced it because of the family matters and others. I reduced it to about 2 months. But my home, my base is in Poland. Although my source of income and most of my activities are out of Poland. So I'm not so much binded with Poland. I use this country as just a place to live. And if you are economically not so dependent on Polish government as I am, Poland is a pretty good place to be. So it depends on the situation of each person, right?
How is Poland a great place to be then, other than in the sense that you just mentioned it?
Well, it is a very safe country. If you look at the stats, about the burglaries and other nasty things that happen everywhere, Poland has much less than most of European countries. Is on the top. Poland is still, even with this inflation, it is still fairly cheap country to live, especially if you have dollars or euros in your pocket and you're not so dependent on Polish zloty. Basically, relation between quality of living and prices is quite excellent here. People are generally nice. Well, maybe not as nice as in Texas or Arizona, but good, mostly good people. Young generations and mid-age people usually do speak at least some English. The attitude towards free markets, capitalism, although our government does not reflect this, that's a problem. But the Polish nation in general, I know it's hard to make general statements, is not hostile to these ideas. The idea of getting richer and living free life is appreciated here. So that's quite different than, for example, in France or in Argentina, for example. So these are some of the features that I really like about Poland. So it's not an excellent place to live, but it's pretty good.
Can I ask you then, during the pandemic, what were there many restrictions here with regards to that? You know, were places locked down hard? Were, you know, you say it's a decent, the population in general.
There were some restrictions, of course, but they were not as hard as in many Western European countries. So when I hear my friends from, say, Greece or Italy saying that they needed to ask permission to leave their home by sending a text message and waiting to get this permission or not from some authorities, that's unbelievable. That never happened in Poland. There were restrictions. There were many types of businesses closed, such as bars, restaurants, schools for some time. And other places where large numbers of people do gather. And I think these restrictions went too far. Especially at the beginning, there were some crazy restrictions. For example, we couldn't go to the forest. Everybody is laughing on this. But they were lighter than in most of Western Europe. However, there was one restriction that I really disliked, and it was harder than in most of Europe. And not many people talk about this, but Polish government basically closed all the airports except Warsaw Airport for some time operated, only to receive these special designated flights that Polish government organized to bring Poles back home. Horrible idea, and it went. It was bitter and funny. I took one of these flights, actually, because I needed to go back from the United States, and I took this flight, but not from US. I took it from Amsterdam. Anyway, so for limited time, Warsaw Airport operated just to accept these special flights, but maybe that took 1 month. So, and later they closed it totally, and I think our airports did not operate at all for 1 or 1.5 years.
Really?
Maybe 1 year. I don't remember exactly, but long time. And German airports operated in a limited fashion, but they did. So that was one of the harshest restrictions, and stupid, basically.
That does seem a bit strange.
Yeah.
And was that a result of the government deciding that that was a way to stop the spread of the virus, or was there something else about that?
Yeah. They thought that, you know, tourists coming to Poland on the plane, they would bring virus, and yeah, they could still come by bus or by train, yeah. But the flight is the dangerous one. They decided so. They really restricted that branch of tourism. Let's say
I've got a CV of yours here, and the latest thing that I've got on here is that you're the president of Liberty International. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Tell me a little bit about Liberty International and the work of Liberty International.
So Liberty International is actually quite old organization, as it was established back in 1969 under different name. And it changed name into ISIL, International Society for Individual Liberty, in 1989. And most people remember us as ISIL. And this is basically the oldest organization that is both international and libertarian, promoting ideas of liberty all over the world. Our new changed mission is finding and expanding freedom in unfree world. So you can see we are quite close. We are very inspired by many authors. This particular mission, actually, you will find a relation to Harry Brown's book, How I Found Freedom in Unfree World. I'm a big fan of this book, and I strongly believe that even though taxes are high in most places in the world, regulations are tough, but there are still oases of freedom. And when it comes to personal freedoms, when it comes to travel, when it comes to investments, and let's use the positive things that globalization brings us. Today, it is easier than ever to identify and utilize some fantastic things in all these areas that I mentioned all over the world. This could be, you know, second passport. This could be investment in Honduras. This could be maybe medical tourism, practicing medical tourism, and so on and so forth. So my organization is here to help people, average people, individuals, to find and use these freedoms that the world offers. So we do have many different projects, some of them more into networking, like the World Conference that we organize every year since 1982. Big networking event every year in different country, this summer in Madrid, Spain. And you are very, very welcome. We have a collaboration actually with Free Cities Foundation. We have a leadership program for young libertarian leaders named Project Arizona. And this is not a big project in terms of numbers of people, because we typically have between 6 and 10 students in Phoenix, Arizona. And Arizona is still relatively one of the freest places, but not just in terms of low regulation and taxes, but also, and that's very important for my program, there are real and strong institutions defending and even playing in offense for freedom. Free market think tanks, law groups, even journalists. There's an entire ecosystem for freedom. So my students go there and they sunk it, you know. It's a very inspirational place, especially if you have so much networking, as we do offer education and volunteering opportunities. This is six weeks long libertarian bootcamp, basically. That's Project Arizona. We have online program named Libertarian Solutions, very much going aligned with our mission. We will be expanding some of the features of Libertarian Solutions. We'll talk more this year about economic freedom, financial freedom. There are many projects. It's hard to name all of them, but what binds them is our focus on individual freedom. And we strongly believe there are places, institutions, and areas that offer freedom in this world, and we want to bring it closer to people, especially people who live in less fortunate countries.
You mentioned a few of the tools of liberty at the start of that: flag theory, travel, being able to move around. According to you, what are the most important elements of the free society or the free? What tools, if you're talking about less privileged people, let's say, in the world, what are their best moves to gain freedom, to gain liberty? Which tools would they look to, according to your organization?
Well, it depends, of course. Age group, nationality, lifestyle. So there's no one recipe for everyone. But first of all, having ability to travel, that's a big thing. And learning what countries are more preferential towards immigration, that's a huge thing. We are actually having our first ever research program at Liberty International now. It is Work Migration Index, and we are researching countries all over the world on what kind of barriers how expensive, how much time consuming barriers do they put for immigrant who wants to come there for strictly economic reasons to change his or her life. Not refugee running from war, but a person who wants to change his or her life. We ran a pilot of this. We researched three countries at the beginning: Poland, Canada, and Ukraine. And we have very interesting findings. Actually, Ukraine is far more liberal in that respect than these two other countries. Although Poland and Canada also are not very bad. But we want to make a full index in next 1 or 2 years. We are raising funds for it. It's not easy project. But that's an example of a tool that we want, because index typically people associate with very academic work. You know, that there is a book presented, but nobody reads it. And maybe some foundation pays for it or government. No, in our index is supposed to be a practical tool for people who think about moving out of their country for a short time or long time, doesn't matter. And can study our index and to learn what is the good place for them to go. But coming back to your question. So for young people, usually it could be connected with education. So what kind of studies do they offer in other countries? How easy is to get visa? For maybe a little bit older people, but still young, people in their 30s, already some investment opportunities and how capital is protected. Then maybe for a bit older people, they may think about where to spend their retirement time, where they can easily invest and get maybe residence card, where it is safe to go, and so on and so forth. So different people, different needs, but cool ideas about being freer and happier.
Interestingly, we've just lived through a time of probably the most restrictive travel, the most restrictive travel restrictions that we've ever experienced. In my life, I've never known such restrictions on the ability to travel. And a lot of people are not optimistic about the future of travel, especially across borders. Do you have an opinion on that? Do you have an opinion on the trajectory of, Are we trending towards a freer world, according to you?
I think there are two trajectories. From one hand, the governments, especially when they work hand by hand together, they are limiting our freedoms. And the COVID crisis showed us very well that if they want to restrict our ability to travel and other freedoms, they will do this. They just need a reason. This is very different than what we thought the world will be going towards, right? We thought that if the more globalization we have, the more economic opportunities we have, the more freedom, including freedom to travel, we should have. But COVID showed us that, hold on, things are not so easy. Another reason is connected to climate change and policies that certain groups lobby hard to implement, and politicians listen to these groups. I'm talking about the Green Movement, Greta Thunberg, and so on and so forth. These people don't even hide it, that they say in the long term, or maybe even not so long term, in a few years, we want to limit your travel because, you know, you emit CO2 and greenhouse gases and so on and so forth. So hold on, maybe you can spend your vacation in Great Britain and not leave it for Maldives, or maybe you can do it once a year. Stuff like that, very dangerous. From the other hand, the forces of free markets, the free people with their businesses, they work towards less problems to trade internationally, to work, to, for example, in Liberty International, I work with people from three continents. And it's much easier now than in the past, not just thanks to Google Meet, Zoom, and other software, which is great, of course, but also, you know, now the infrastructure of contracts, invoices, I think it's much easier than in the past. But travel is, you're right, travel is one of these areas where it might be hard for the private parties to bypass government, because this is strictly this is an area where government puts its hand heavily on it, and I'm worried about this actually.
I mean, what's to stop governments restricting travel on account of people leaving as well? I mean, at the moment, yes, COVID was in many people's eyes a good reason to restrict travel, but you could argue that the movement of people incentivizes governments to be more competitive, you would think, but they have another tool at their disposal, which is just to stop people leaving. Is that something you could consider happening?
We observed that this happened during COVID. Right now, it is easier than under COVID restrictions, and we have relatively a lot of freedom to travel. But the other dangers connected to geopolitical situation, wars, different interests of different countries, bad relations, the trade war, China versus US or West versus East, and these reasons may pile up, and I'm really worried about, plus this entire ecological thing that I mentioned with CO2 emissions and so on and so forth. So I'm skeptical here. I'm really worried about the ability to travel. Maybe it'll be still easy within Europe, but going to other continents, flying, I'm afraid that this will be actually restricted.
Does Liberty International have any projects connected with highlighting this about the ESG movement, the environmental movement?
Well, at the Libertarian Solutions online program, we talk about climate change and policies that politicians prepare to tackle it. We had one expert speaking about this. So we do touch these issues, and often that topic is covered at our Liberty International World conferences. However, we do not have a specific program that would be fully focused on this ecological issue. And maybe we should.
Maybe. I mean, what about carbon tax? Do you have an opinion on the whole realm of carbon tax and whether it's effective or whether it should exist?
You know, I, as a libertarian, I don't like taxes, and politicians typically add more and more of them to tackle, to challenge some problem. And especially here in Poland, the government says, look, we reduced taxes. And actually, yes, they reduced one or two taxes, but they added so many other small taxes that didn't exist before. For example, sugar tax. Now Coca-Cola costs almost twice more than it did cost 3 years ago. And the carbon tax, well, I don't want to discuss this particular tax in detail because I don't know enough. But I'm afraid it'll be like with many other taxes, that it's just a reason for government and politicians to gather more funds for their expensive and inefficient operations. And it'll be not really tackle the problems with environment.
Do you have many people that you know, certainly at your organization, who live as what I would call digital nomads? You sound like you may be even classed as a digital nomad.
I'm not typical digital nomad because I do live most of the year in one place with my family, and these family ties also are quite strong. And because of that reason, I don't think about, I don't know, going to Argentina now. I who do have friends who live in Argentina, for example, and are typical digital nomads, and they enjoy it. They have a great lives. I am economically not binded to Poland, as I mentioned. That makes my situation different than most Poles. Let's be honest, my neighbors and other people. And I do travel to US, to United States quite often, and some other countries for conferences, which is part of my work. So in my case, not really digital nomad, although not also a normic. I'm somewhere in between, I would say. And I do have friends and colleagues, even Chris Caleta, the one you interviewed, he's with us at Freedom and Entrepreneurship Foundation. We actually used to work in Liberty International in the past as well. He's very much digital nomad. I have a good friend who is alumnus of our programs, including Project Arizona, living in Argentina. We just talked 2 weeks ago. He lived in Colombia before, another good place for digital nomads. I have few friends who are PTs, permanent tourists. I have another friend who lives in Dubai 6 months and 5 months in Poland, becoming a tax resident of Dubai. And
I've never heard very of great a PT before. That's new to me. Permanent tourist.
Oh, yeah.
What's the difference between that and a digital nomad?
This is older name, I believe, PT.
Ah, perpetual traveler as well. Right, permanent tourist.
Okay, yes. But I have a good friend from Language of Liberty Institute, one of the co-directors, and the Aishan, who taught at Liberty Camps even long time ago when I did my first Liberty Camps. That is back in 2007, 2008. And he was promoting this concept of PT already then. This is about 15 years ago. So I got inspired long time ago. Before I could do anything in that area, I knew that, okay, these guys are really enjoying freedom. I like what they do, and I wish one day I can do at least a bit of this.
So as a strategy then, digital, you're in favor of digital nomadism. What do you see as the pros and cons of the digitally nomadic life?
Big pro is that usually digital nomads, they have their source of income in a different country than the country they live, at least most of the year. And usually they also have their companies in other countries. It depends. Some of them maybe start a company in a new country where they live. Some of them come with existing company that they have in the old country. Maybe sometimes they have a company in the third country. So three countries could be involved. The mother country where they are from originally, where their family still lives. The new country where they operate, and the third country where their company. And this is probably the best option. I don't know if this is possible for most people, but why it is good? Well, you want to be as much independent from government as possible, as much sovereign person as possible. Well, I'm horrified at when I see what happens in countries like Poland, for example, where entire retirement system is dominion of government, and most Poles do not save money for retirement. They become, in my opinion, semi-slaves. They are totally dependent on government for a big chunk of their lives. You know, if they go on pension and they finish their work, professional career at the age of, let's say, 65 for men in Poland, 60 for women, and they could live easily until 85, and they don't have savings, that means 20 or 25 years as a semi-slave of government. And these people in government, they know very well that, and they would manipulate, and they would make promises before the elections. I'll give you the 13th or 14th pension. Vote for me. And so you see these really sad things, stories, where these people think that they get something, but in reality, they are exploited by government. I don't want that. And I think the digital nomad style of living makes it harder for any government to basically have semi-slaves to grow this farm of people. I don't want farm of people. I want independent, free people who have sovereignty, who have their own brains, and they make sovereign decisions. And any government would need to treat them with dignity, not like a tools that they can use for their political ends.
We certainly, at the Free Cities Foundation, we see more and more people showing an interest in the notion of moving to another jurisdiction. According to you know a little bit about Free Cities. I know you mentioned Prospera and...
Yeah, I know a bit about the autonomous jurisdictions. Yeah.
What do you see as the pitfalls then of this idea?
Well, Usually it is the risk of hosting nation, hosting countries, government taking over the zone or changing the rules of the game. Especially if people invest large chunks of money, they want to have stability. And if this is happening in a not very stable country that is currently offering autonomous zone, great. But you never know with these people. If the Communist Party takes power, or who knows, maybe National Socialist Party takes power, this might be in danger. We know what happened with Hong Kong. And bad things happened also to other jurisdictions, like I think Province Limon in Costa Rica had large autonomy. It was cancelled. But I still think it's worth to try. And these zones maybe were not well designed. And maybe better design is possible. And we should strive for better solutions. We should maybe lobby these causes in these governments in a more solid fashion. And maybe we should have actually provisions in constitution. There is no 100% guarantee, but that's life. 100% guarantee does not exist. But we can make this, we can reduce this risk severely if we do it well. And the different autonomous jurisdictions or maybe places that strive to become one have this design in a better or worse shape. So I see some examples in this world, in our world, that are promising. And I see some that are totally fake, but I would not call it autonomous zones. What I have in mind is, for example, Liberland. I think Liberland is scam. It's not, there is no jurisdiction whatsoever. There is no good design about making it happen. There is nothing really happening in that island. And there's only a lot of swag that is being sold to people and promises being made. And okay, you know, and I know that nothing will happen, but there are people who buy these dreams and invest their money, and that's not fair. So a lot of good projects, the one in Honduras, for example, and others that you guys are involved in, but not everything works well. So we should investigate each case separately.
We do talk about this a lot at Free Cities, the notion that if a government changes, what happens to your autonomous zone? And which has happened in Honduras right now. The ZA's law was passed by a right-wing government. Now you've got a left-wing government who are currently against the ZA's officially. But there are international treaties in place which mean that were they to renegade on certain agreements, then it would become an issue, an international issue. I'm going to just default to Peter a second. What's the name of the one?
It's the Kafka Free Trade Agreement.
The Kafka Free Trade Agreement. Kafta. Basically, that's an international treaty. America are involved. So, and that means stealing property from Prospero would become an international incident. So I think, like you say, everyone needs to make an effort to put sort of like safeguards in place. And I think Prospero appeared to be doing that. I want to go back to the notion of digital nomadism and just the notion that movement is happening. Let's assume that free movement is something which is on the increase, let's say. How do you envisage a world in, say, 50 years? Let's say your ideas, the Liberty International's ideas are coming into fruition. What does the world look like in 50 years or 100 years? What does the world look like at the point where you are happy with the way things are turning out?
That's a very interesting question. I think that would be a world full of different, but usually free, jurisdictions that flourish, like Singapore, for example. I was in Singapore a few years ago and I loved it. I mean, it's very well managed place. It's not perfect, again, some problems with civil liberties. But other than that, very interesting place. So I think there will be more Singapores. and these places may differ, you know, if they will be in far Asia, they may have different worldviews could prevail. In some places, it will be connected with religion, more Islamic. I can envision more Islamic version of free city, like Dubai, for example. I can envision more progressive version of free city. Who knows, maybe like Hamburg or Berlin, or Amsterdam. I can envision maybe more Latino, so maybe full of colors, life, and small businesses type of jurisdictions somewhere in Latin America. So I envision a world that is very diverse in terms of lifestyles, in terms of worldviews, but where most of these places will actually respect human liberty, private property, because these values happen to work best. And we can differ as people. We may have different religions. We may have different habits, but we all want freedom at the end. We all want our stuff to be respected as our stuff. We want security, safety. So if this energy is unleashed and we are no more slaves of welfare state, that would be the necessary condition, of course, to see the world according to Liberty International, let's say. Then I see a lot of Singapore's, Dubai's, ZS, places like that, just all of them respecting human liberty, but all very different when it comes to lifestyle and that kind of issues.
Okay, we have got 2 minutes left. Unfortunately,
we can make it seven.
We can make it seven. Yeah. Oh, okay. I was going to ask you the last question then. I still will, because I think that was a nice ending. But yeah, I have one last question. It's a question we ask everyone on this podcast, and I'd interested to hear your answer. If you were granted a sabbatical from your current job for a whole year, where everything was paid for you, you could do whatever you wanted, what would you do in that year?
I actually love my job. I don't want sabbatical.
Good answer.
That's why it's so hard to envision something else.
What is it that's so good about your job that you wouldn't want to give it up for anything else?
I see that we really influence individuals, people with ideas of freedom, with vision of better life. And I also see growth of this organization. When I joined, we were kind of messy, let's be honest. And I finally see things are changing. More projects are being built. Happy alumni writing to us. So these are things that make you think, oh shit, this is nice. I like it. I love it. I want to do more. That's why it's so hard to think about this sabbatical and alternative vision.
Have you got a particular personal favorite? How long have you been working at Liberty International?
Since July 2019.
Have you got a particular high point or a particular something, a project that really captured your imagination from that time?
Well, Project Arizona is a project that I built from the scratch. And it was born through my passion for this place. And I will not hide it. I wanted to find a reason to come back to Arizona. I used to go there quite often in the past when I was in my 20s for internships, stuff like that. My best friend lived there, so I didn't need to care about the housing. But at some point, I had no reason to come back, and it's quite costly. So I thought, like, what can I do to advance liberty? Go to Arizona more often, as I love it, especially in the cold months in Poland. Poland is not very pleasant in cold months. Now in March, it's still okay, but believe me, it can be much worse. And something that will support my living, will make money. So I needed to combine all these pieces, and I designed Project Arizona in my mind. And then I went there in 2016 just to see if this idea of making a leadership program for young freedom lovers from all over the world coming to Arizona for internship, education, volunteering, etc., libertarian bootcamp, if this is a crazy idea that people don't subscribe for and would roll their eyes, or maybe it is something that actually has a potential, and I realized that they like it, and they start write small checks for it, because I told them I need money to start. So that was the indicator that, okay, I will do this. I want to start this project. It was even before I joined Liberty International. I came to ally with this project in some sense. So this is my, you ask about, is my favorite project, favorite focus. This is Project Arizona. Still, it is.
Okay, then two questions about that. Why Arizona, number one? What's so good about Arizona? And two, have you got any success stories that came from that project? Anyone in particular who you can mention who's gone on to great things?
I do. Why Arizona? Well, it is connected with two things. First off, this is still pretty good place for human liberty, especially when it comes to regulations. Taxes, they are okay, but not the best. You find better states. The regulations are really better than in most places. But even more importantly, they have a very strong institutions guarding liberty. Places like Goldwater Institute, where I interned twice in my 20s, they do fabulous work. They are not so well known, but they should, because they are really changing that state. They have, their lobbying is very efficient, and it works. Americans for Prosperity and many other organizations, just fantastic people, both libertarians and free market conservatives, doing great things and changing that state. I love this environment. I made personal friendships. I made personal network. Without that network, it would not be possible. So sometimes people ask me, why don't you go to Texas? And I say, I don't know people in Texas. And I know people in Phoenix. That is a big difference. Plus, I love Arizona in winter. Great weather. People are super nice. I like this also Mexican influence, Mexican food, and so forth. So, combination of these things that made me to decide I want to do it there. Now, you're asking about the success stories. Yes, we do have a number of them. I can mention Jorge, for example, Galicia from Venezuela, who was a strong freedom fighter when he was a student. He was part of this Vente Venezuela illegal political party, classical liberal one. He was jailed. He needed to hide and so on and so forth. At Project Arizona, one of the most vocal students, and he was offered to stay in America, and he seek asylum. He's now living in America and working for few organizations, among them the Fund for American Studies, where he has this phenomenal tour of U.S. campuses talking to people about dangers of socialism, you know. Young people in America, they flirt with socialism. They think that this is some cool idea that people work less and they have money for everything. And he says, I was there. I am actually survivor of socialism. Don't try. It's not worth it. I was there. You don't need to go there. And he's very successful. He becomes more and more popular, quoted in news, in newspapers, in I see sometimes he's in television. I'm very happy to see this career. Or Yuri Terekov, who is one of the leading opposition leaders in Russia, of Russia, I would say, because he doesn't live in Russia anymore. Oppositionists are imprisoned there. He lives in Vilnius. He's one of the leaders of Free Russia Forum, run by the chess master. Kasparov. Gary Kasparov, exactly. And so I like Yuri, great guy, and I actually go every December to Vilnius for Free Russia Forum. I'm interested in these topics, but I'm also very proud to see my alumnus doing great things to push the agenda of Free Russia forward. And obviously, Russia is not free, but there are people who work on this, and I hope that the day will come sooner than later.
Okay. Jacek, thank you for talking. We've run over. You better run because you've got a train to catch. Thanks for talking. It's been great speaking to you, and we'll see you another time, hopefully.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be your guest, and great work with Free Cities Foundation, with Liberty in Our Lifetime Conference. I wish we'll collaborate more and more. This has already started, but we'll do more in the future, I'm pretty sure, because you guys have great ideas that can change the world, and I'm pretty sure they will. Thank you.
Thank you.